A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. I'm your host, William Liu. This is another episode of the Raptors Reaction Podcast Classic, and joining me to look back on one of the most, I wouldn't say most famous Game 7s. I would say most other NBA fans aren't reminiscing fondly on this one. But as Raptor fans, you know, Game 7 between the Raptors and the Miami Heat was definitely a celebration. And joining me to cover that is, Colin Show co-host Josh Hart. How you been doing, man? What's good with you?
Do my best. The quarantine's horrible. I miss my life. I miss my friends. I miss hugs. But fortunate to have my health. No one too close to me has been too sick, and I've been really thankful for that. But it's good to be on the show to talk about what I think of as the Kyle Lowry game or the Toronto Tupac game. A classic moment for Raptors fans, definitely. And I think a signature moment of the league in the last few years. It's up there. It's Kyle Lowry put up 35 points in a Game 7, including a famous Mike Breen bang to knock off Dwayne Wade. It was, I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah. So the Raptors in this game, as you mentioned, it's Lowry doing the thing. You know what I mean? Like, doing the thing where he is... I think this is probably the starter where the Kyle Lowry in the playoffs narrative really was at its peak, because at the start of this series, before we even get to a Game 7 situation, at the start of this series, after Game 1, I believe, that was the game where Kyle Lowry sticks around late, it's like 1 a.m., and he's shooting around just in an empty gym after the Raptors lose yet another Game 1. And he's, at this point, shooting like 30-some-odd percent. DeMar was doing that as well, but there was a lot of attention focused on Kyle and how bad he was in terms of shooting the basketball. And, I think that's really where it hit the mainstream. Like, yeah, this guy's not cutting it. But, to Kyle Lowry's credit, in this Heat series, he has three games where he has over 30, including this one, where he has 35 points to carry the Raptors past the Miami Heat, which this is not a very good Heat team, I must admit. When I was looking at some of the names, they kept talking about on the broadcast how much they miss Hassan Whiteside, who had got like an MCL injury in Game 3. So it's unfortunate. But look, listen, the Raptors blew out the Miami Heat by a score of 116-89 on May 15th, 2016. First off, Josh, like, what was your life back? What was your life like back in 2016?
Yeah, it's, what were you in it's life? It's funny that you mentioned that the 2016 playoffs. I remember well because me and my girlfriend were in Scotland, where she was finishing her master's. Mm-hmm. So I was watching this series and the Pacers series before it, like at 3 a.m. in Edinburgh, like middle of the night. Had to be quiet in the living room, drinking Tennent's beer or Iron Brew and vodka by myself. But I remember these games super duper well. Like, that Pacers series was, classic moments. Was it Rodney Hood? Who was it that
Solomon Hill?
Had his hand on the ball. Solomon Hill.
Yeah.
That moment, like, I remember I was in Scotland, hanging out, watching basketball games in the middle of the night. It was a good time. You were what, like an intern at the Score back then? Like, what were you doing? What were you doing back in 2016?
No, come on, I was working full time at the Score by then.
I guess that would make sense. You were out of school for a couple of years.
Yeah, and not to disclose where I lived, but you were at my old apartment, which is kind of close to where you live now. And it was just like an absolute warehouse. Like, I'm not joking when I say I lived in a Nike shoebox, essentially. Like, there were no windows in my place. But whatever, it was a very good time, because I remember the weather being great. I remember watching this game and getting so hype and fired up. And you know, it's good that you bring up the Indiana series, because that was also a Game 7. And I asked you before this, like, hey, you know, I'm thinking of recapping one of the two other Game 7 wins outside of, obviously, Game 7 against Philly last year. You know, do you want to do Indiana or Miami? And you're like, yeah, definitely this one. Don't want to revisit that one again. And I agree with you. This game is so much more enjoyable in the sense that, like, it wasn't just about the Raptors advancing to the conference finals for the first time in franchise history. It wasn't even necessarily about sort of the recognition that came with all that stuff. Because I don't think it actually brought the Raptors that much recognition in the national sphere. I remember distinctly that there used to be this poll that ran on CBS Sports.
Was that year?
That was the year where the poll where it was like, which one of these four teams is going to win the NBA championship? And it had the Cavs, it had the Warriors, it had the Thunder, and then it had other. And I'm like, yo, there's only four teams left. Man. Why did you just say Raptors? I know no one's going to pick Raptors. I get it, all right? The Raptors were not going to beat the Cavs or the Warriors that year. But come on, man, the disrespect. I just think, yeah, like to that point about disrespect, like I just remember this game was just something that shattered and broke against all the sort of negative stereotypes against the Raptors at that time, which is that, like, they couldn't get it done in big moments, that Kyle Lowry's a choker and all these other things. And, yeah, it was so satisfying, not just because the Raptors advanced, because the Raptors did it so emphatically. I don't actually remember that many landslide wins in the playoffs, you know, for the Raptors. Every single game was kind of, like, grinded out. You're battling back from behind. You got to get game two because you always lost game one. And even game seven against Indiana, that was like a 4-point game. It was ugly right to the end. But I think neither team cracked over 95 points. This game, the Raptors, like, they were, I don't know, it was shaping up to be an ugly game early on. But as the third quarter and fourth quarter especially, they just pulled away in a fashion where it became a blowout at the end. And we're talking about at the very end of the game. Bebe Nagera's on the floor. A rookie, DeLon Wright's on the floor, playing against his brother, Darrell Wright, who was on the cusp of retiring from the NBA. So it was actually the only time those two brothers got to play in the same game, which I thought was really cool. You know, it was that level of just, like, a blowout. And the scenes of seeing Dwayne Wade with a, you know, glossy look on his face, the look of Goran Dragic, you know, with probably missing four teeth from this playoff series alone, sitting on the bench dejected. It brought so much joy to my heart. You know what I mean? This game,
yeah,
I love it.
No, I love that the Raptors got to play spoiler to what would have been the only time LeBron and D-Wade matched up in the playoffs.
Right, right.
I think there was a lot of like national media that was excited for this matchup. I don't think it would have been competitive. I don't think it would have been any more competitive than the Raptors were in the Eastern Conference Finals, which we'll remember LeBron James noted as not being a difficult time in his life. treated him like MJ and Gary Payton in the finals. That line still has me laughing. But yeah, it was amazing to see the Raptors go out and, you know, blow out a team in the playoffs in Game 7. It was, you know, unbelievable. Like, as you know, during the broadcast, and I feel like every time the Raptors go to the Eastern Conference Finals, we have to talk about the Vince Carter missed three after the graduation.
Mm-hmm.
That was discussed on the broadcast. This time watching the game, I watched the TSN broadcast. When I saw the game 4 years ago, I watched the ESPN one, so I thought I'd see what, you know, Matt and Jack were up to. But they talked about, yeah, Vince Carter missing at the end of Game 7 there, and this was the first time that those bad memories were exercised, and it was, you know, really sweet in 2019 when the Raptors were able to win in a Game 7 to go to the Eastern Finals over the 76ers.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it was amazing. The Raptors never blew out teams out. The only other time the Raptors blew teams out in the playoffs was last year in the finals.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, there were games where they led wire to wire in Oakland, but, you know, people just don't want to give them credit, I guess. Okay, so let's start with the starting lineups here, because I thought this is just such an interesting moment in time for basketball. So the Raptors starting lineup, obviously Lowry and DeMar in the backcourt, DeMar Carroll at three, which this was the first year they signed DeMar, and he was hurt for most of the year, so he still had a pretty good reputation at this point. Patrick Patterson at four, okay. I mean, I guess the starter was Louis Scola that year. So the power forward position was definitely an issue this year. As much as Scola held it down in the regular season, he just wasn't really... I mean, at the age of like 36, 37, like, he just didn't have it in a playoff series. So Pat started, and then Bismack Biyombo started because JV, who had a pretty good playoff run, you know, before this point, hurt his, I believe his hand, or no, his ankle. He hurt his ankle, in game three of...
Both he and,
Whiteside.
Whiteside had lower body injuries.
Yeah, yeah, it's unfortunate because those two guys were actually the two main two points of both teams, and it just changed the series entirely. And then for the Heat, so they had Dragic starting a point guard. This might have been the first year they got Dragic. I think they...
Maybe.
It was supposed to be him and Bosch and Whiteside and Wade, and it was supposed to be this super team. But then, you know, obviously, very tragically, Bosch's health sort of intervened there. And I guess, you know, for Whiteside, he wasn't healthy either. But yeah, they got Dragic at point guard. Dwayne Wade, which this might have been the last, like, really, really good Dwayne Wade year.
Good year, yeah.
ISO Joe. Joe Johnson starting at three. Luol Deng at four. And then Justice Winslow. A rookie Justice Winslow playing the center position because, again, as we mentioned, Whiteside got hurt. And Amari was hurt, too. Again, the Heat had a lot of random players. All right? I do not have a lot of memories of Amari Stoudemire on the Heat other than him taking wine baths. But, yeah, they started Winslow. So this is just a strange assortment of players. And what was even stranger was Justice Winslow, even though he started at center, as small ball center, he was guarding Kyle Lowry. So you have the five guarding the one. Like, there were... It was a very strange game for Game 7.
It's like Magic Johnson in the finals.
Yes. Except this time he scores like 4 points and loses by 40.
He's not Magic Johnson.
Yeah, unfortunately, he's not Magic. And yeah, he was not replacing Kareem. He was replacing Whiteside.
It's still insane to me that Luol Deng and Joe Johnson saw like 30 minutes apiece in the playoffs like 4 years ago. It seems, those guys seem like they played in like 1997. It's impossible for me to recollect. And wasn't this right before the Luol Deng summer? You know, the Luol Deng summer? You know, the news stories, Atlanta Hawks?
Right, with Danny Ferry, who is, I think, already back in the NBA. So, you know, it just goes to show that if you give a half-hearted apology, you can, and you know, yeah, you can get anywhere in life, apparently. Yeah, I think it might have been. Yeah, and I gotta say, even though I remember these guys as being mad old, I was pretty impressed with what Luol Deng and Joe Johnson were able to do. I mean, there was a stretch there.
Joe Johnson looked amazing.
Yeah, so he only has 13 points in this game on 6-9 shooting. Which is totally, I mean, he's a minus 26 as well in 31 minutes. Like, you could totally live with that. But I'm telling you, even watching it back now, even knowing that the Raptors are going to win this game by 25, viscerally, seeing Joe Johnson score three straight baskets causes so much anxiety because of what happened in 2014. Because, you know, in that Nets series. So, yeah, these guys were still able to do a couple of things, but really what it came down to in this game was, A, Kyle Lowry was amazing. We will talk plenty about that. But B, the Raptors just dominated them from a physical standpoint. Like, this is why you play to get 56 wins in the regular season and get home court advantage, because in a Game 7 situation, you want to have home court, you want to have your guys energized and rested with the crowd and confidence behind them, because where the Raptors beat the Heat was the fact that they got 20 offensive rebounds, and the Heat only got 7. And those extra possessions, when you watch it back, it's really just Patrick Patterson shoving Luol Deng, like tossing around like a rag doll, and getting 7 offensive rebounds. When have you ever saw Patrick Patterson get 7? Bismack obviously doing his thing on the boards, 16 rebounds, 6 offensive. Even DeMar had 4 offensive rebounds. Kyle had 3. So the Raptors starting lineup just physically kind of bullied Miami. And that, along with Kyle Lowry being phenomenal, was the reason why they won this game. Would you agree?
Yeah, for sure. It was unbelievable to see the kind of intensity from Patrick Patterson. I don't remember that at any other time in his basketball playing career. Mm-hmm. Being that locked in, it just seemed like mind blowing. He was like someone that I really could cheer for, and I don't cheer for Patrick. Many of your fans know this. I came up with the Patrick Patterson Award for rotation player who shits the bed because that's all he ever did. Yeah. And he still gives you some classic Patrick Patterson-isms by being 0-for-14 and momentum threes in this game.
I don't understand how every single time the ball swung to Pat in an important moment, he would brick. And there was open shots. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, classic stuff.
Yeah.
Classic stuff.
Yeah.
I really was excited to see him do that to Kawhi Leonard in the playoffs this year.
Oh my god. The first time ever we see Kawhi yell at somebody.
Well, like Kawhi Leonard driving to the lane, gets triple teamed, kicks it out to Patrick Patterson, wide open.
Yeah. No,
in the corner.
Meanwhile Pat's guarding Anthony Davis.
Yeah. Exactly.
Let me see it. There's still time for this, man. There's still time.
There is still time.
Yeah, but you know,
Adam Silver, we need it.
Yeah, seriously, Adam Silver. That this is what we're dying to see again. Patrick Patterson in the playoffs. But no, this is actually one of Patterson's best playoff moments, I would say. It's crazy because he has 7 offensive rebounds. He has 7 free throw attempts. A lot of those are just him getting the board and then getting fouled, going for the putback. Yeah, he misses some threes, but he played really well in this game. And really, he was the only guy who could guard Joe Johnson, which highlights another classic issue the Raptors used to have with just big, small forwards. They had nobody to guard them. Like, when Patrick Patterson's your best option defensively against a Joe Johnson, I mean, A, it does speak to the fact that Pat is a good defender, especially before his knee injury. But, like, that shouldn't be your go-to option. Like, you needed somebody better in that position. And, of course, you know, Damari was supposed to be that guy, but Damari was guarding Wade in this one. I thought Damari actually played really well, too, which is really strange because, again, I have such negative memories of these two guys. But Damari really stepped up. I mean, in this game, he was 2-for-2 from 3.
Yeah, I have in my notes that Damari went, like, looked totally decent.
Yeah.
Like, completely satisfactory in this game. Mm-hmm. That was something that I was excited to see.
Yeah, and you know, again, DeMar Carroll's not a guy who was known for hitting momentum-type threes, but there were 2 big sequences where the Raptors were part of, like, 8-0 runs to really stretch this game open and turn it into a blowout, and both times DeMar Carroll was able to cap off those sequences with threes to give the Raptors an advantage here. He was 4-for-5 from the field for 14 points. And I thought one of the most important parts of this game that I forgot about was the fact that Dwayne Wade got into early foul trouble, and I think that really screwed everything up for Miami, because this is still at a time where Wade was definitively the go-to guy, and so many possessions ran through him, and Damari Carroll actually has... Damari has this ability to have these sort of, like, janky-type drives where he kind of, like, is stumbling and running a little too fast and runs into you, and then he falls over, and it's usually called a foul. And he actually drew a couple of free throws this way, but he put the second foul on Dwayne Wade early by doing that. And
that foul was that was all Josh Richardson's fault.
That's true.
He totally blew the rotation. Dwayne Wade went nuts on him because it led to a run from the Raptors. Because Dragic and Dwayne Wade were out for 6 minutes, and the Raptors went crazy during that stretch. Mm-hmm. It was great.
Yeah,
I think that Damari Carroll and Patrick Patterson, and I think another guy here that I want to highlight is Terrence Ross. This was one of the better, like, he had stretches. He didn't get a ton of minutes in this game. I'm looking at the box score, and he saw 18 minutes, which was a little low for him. But he's a +2 in the game. But during those stretches, he looked really solid. Mm-hmm. His second shift wasn't great, but in his first shift, there's a minute-long stretch that I wrote in my notes. I couldn't believe it. It was so much fun. At the 9:45 mark in the second quarter, Terrence Ross picks Dwayne Wade's pocket and runs to the other end of the court to feed Kyle Lowry, who draws a foul. Then at the 9:30 mark, he blocks Josh McRoberts from a pass from Wade that would have been an easy sort of alley-oop. Mm-hmm. And then at 8:45, he hits Dwayne Wade with a hezzy cross and blows by to the rim. It was like, wait a second, why is Terrence Ross, like, the best guy on the court?
That's the thing with Terrence. He has so much, like, natural talent. Like, the shooting stroke is just butter. And I think that is mostly where he's in the NBA now, is just as a shooter. But, like, the athleticism, the quickness, like, you know, it's not easy to break up, for a shooting guard to break up a play right at the rim. But because Terrence has this, like, just, I mean, I don't know, man, probably 44-inch vertical, like, he's able to do that. He's got quickness, he's got good length, And it was really just about putting these moments together consistently, because he definitely had talent, man. He definitely had talent.
Yeah.
And it's actually, it was really funny to me how high Terrence would jump for to secure a defensive rebound that no one else was going to get, versus how much he would use his athleticism going to the basket and trying to, like, dunk on somebody. It was always kind of weird to me, but but no, I was impressed by Terrence. Like, I was pretty much impressed with everybody on the roster. Like, you know, I thought Pat did pretty well in terms of his offensive rebounding. Him sort of just manhandling Luol Deng was great. Damari Carroll made some pretty big, important plays. You know, Terrence Ross, as you mentioned, you know, he has that great shift. Biombo, man, I just... Look, Biombo is not perfect by any means. He has very, very real flaws and things like that. But I miss this dude, man. Like, watching this run, like, he was so lit in the 2016 playoff run. Like, incredibly so, man. Especially after JB got hurt, Bismack comes in, and he's, you know, he's good for, like, 15, 16 rebounds a game and three blocks and a couple of dunks. Pretty much anything he does is a momentum play. And it was just fun watching him, man. Like, did you also miss Biz when you saw this?
Yeah, like, every time I see Bismack Biyombo, I'm like, man, this guy was fun to have around. Mm-hmm. The thing that I noticed, you can see how much less he trusts, Kyle Lowry trusts Bismack Biyombo than he trusts Serge Ibaka. Because you'll see these same, like, actions where where Bismack will get free to roll, but he's not in a perfect position, so Kyle Lowry holds on to the ball. Mm-hmm. And it's just sort of, you see Kyle Lowry look and say, he's not quite there. And looking at games today, you'll see Kyle Lowry's a bit more liberal with Serge Ibaka. Serge is rolling, Kyle will hit him with a pass, even if it's not perfect, because Serge Ibaka has, you know, two hands, not two bricks at the ends of his arms. So it's fun. It was fun to see that difference. Just Kyle Lowry's never had a pick and roll partner as good as Serge Ibaka, and the action that he likes to run with Bismack Biyombo sort of meet their perfection or their ideal state with what he's done with Serge the last 2 years. And it's, you know, yeah, it's fun to see Biz, but the guy that, because if I remember correctly, after this season, Bismack Biyombo gets signed by the Orlando Magic for too much money, and that's what drives Serge to Toronto for sort of some cap relief.
That's true. They signed Bismack Biyombo for 4 years, $72 million, so 18 a year.
Insane.
Yeah, I mean, good for Biz, but damn, like, I don't know if Orlando needed to do that, especially when they had Vucevic and other guys on the roster, but. Yeah, and then the Raptors get Serge. It worked out. It definitely worked out. Bismack, yeah, I just remember, it's just cool watching him play. I don't know, there's just something really fun about watching a member of the Raptors laugh and really soak in the moment and not show any fear, not show any hesitation whatsoever in a Game 7 setting. I felt like everyone else was a little bit nervous. Everyone else was real focused. Like, real, like, I gotta get this shit done. I gotta really perform today. Everyone's really locked in, not showing much emotion. Kyle Lowry really only smiles when he's finally taken out of the game and he gets his applause from the crowd. And then he finally starts smiling and he puts a towel over his head and then he's starting to crack up. But that's like a minute left in the game. Bismack, throughout the course of the game, was, I mean, it was Josh McRoberts, but he was taking Josh McRoberts' lunch, pushing this dude around, and just laughing at him, man. And then towards the end, McRoberts, like, hard fouls Biyombo, like, chops down in his arms after he got beat for yet another play, and he gets himself ejected. And Bismack, again, is just, like, he's just chill and cool, you know what I mean? Like, that confidence that he had was really cool, man. And I think it showed up at times in the Cavs series, too.
Absolutely.
So, shout out Bismack, man.
Wasn't afraid.
Shout
out Biz one time.
He's just, you know, he's great. This is also the game where someone brings a Bismack is my father signed to Jurassic Park. we've talked enough about the supporting guys. Actually, the one other supporting guy I wanted to talk about was, did you remember Jason Thompson on the Raptors? And did you remember him actually playing legitimate rotation minutes?
Oh my goodness, when I saw him, I was like, wait a second, what is he doing? I know that he's only in the game because JV was hurt and Bismack had to start. But man, oh man, was he ever terrible. There's like a terrible foul that he commits in transition. He's behind the play, doesn't hit the guy hard, just barely gets behind. I think it's D Wade, but why did we sign that guy?
Why didn't they just play Scola? I felt like Scola could have done a little bit more than Jason Thompson did.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's a good point.
Ultimately, it didn't really matter because the Raptors won this game by 25 and Jason Thompson only played 7 minutes. But when he checked in the game, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. He was on the Raptors. I forgot. Like, they basically signed him like the Raptors signed Jody Meeks last year. I was just like, yo, come along for the playoffs. You're a veteran. We're going to play you 2-3 minute shifts and hopefully just don't screw it up. And at least to that point, Jason Thompson didn't screw it up. But yeah, it was I had completely forgotten that he was on the team. Okay, let's talk about the main two guys. So, Kyle and DeMar. So, I think this is one of those games where it really illustrates the difference between these two guys. Because even though DeMar has 28 points in this game, he shoots...
It's a lot of empty calories.
He shoots 12 of 29, whereas Kyle Lowry shoots 11 of 20, including 5 of 7 from 3. Yeah, I don't know, man. There was a couple of plays here where DeMar was forcing shots. There's one sequence where he gets swatted by Luol Deng on back-to-back possessions. There's another sequence where he misses a wide-open three, gets his own rebound, but then bricks the floater like off the backboard, and then fouls the...
Then he tries to get the ball again and fouls.
And then the Raptors are in, and they're in the bonus. The Heat are in the bonus, so they actually shoot 2 free throws from it. It's odd. There were legitimate moments where DeMar hit some big shots, contested shots, some nice floaters in the lane. But, like, the fact that he really failed to, you know, contain Luol Deng, he got kind of bullied by Joe Johnson again. It was weird. Whereas with Kyle Lowry, he just played... This was a really, really good game from Kyle. He just really, as a playmaker, did really well. Found Bismack Biyombo quite a few times on dunks. Led this sort of, push in the fourth quarter where he hits Damari Carroll for a transition three, then Terrence Ross for a transition three, then Biyombo for a dunk, and all of a sudden it's like a 20-point game. And then Lowry just throughout the course of the game, I kind of miss this era of Kyle Lowry as the scorer. Like, he's just going out there with a mentality to get a bucket. And that was missing in the last couple of years because he had better players around him. But yeah, I miss this era. This is peak Kyle Lowry.
Absolutely. These are the days that Kyle Lowry over everything as a mantra was born to represent. Though I do think it's fair to talk about DeMar DeRozan being really bad in the first half. No assists. He had a whole bunch of misses. He was putting up a lot of things short. He looked tired in a way that, you know, doesn't really make sense to me. You saw Luol Deng blown by him on the baseline a couple times, which is crazy to me. Like,
yeah, we're talking about Luol. I mean, even a young Luol Deng doesn't really blow by a lot of people. An older Luol Deng should definitely not be blown by you, man.
And you just see him with his hands down on defense a lot. Like, it was just a game that I don't know. I've never been a huge DeMar DeRozan guy, and this was the kind of game that made you screw up your face and like kiss your teeth about his effort on the defensive end. The fact that he's such a bad three-point shooter, even in the corners, like I never understood it.
Well, the one he did technically hit a three, but he had a foot on the line. he did that a lot. I don't know why. It was like when he had a foot on the line, he could magically shoot from three-point range. But if you move it back like 2 inches, it was going to be a break.
But that three-pointer that was later called off. So it was a 10-point run. The Heat call a timeout. It comes back after it. It's been called overturned. The Heat are now down 9. And then they go on like a 4-0 run. DeMar DeRozan gets like loses his focus, tries to pick off a play, gets burned. There's an easy layup by Dragic on the other end. Classic stuff. Like,
yeah.
I just the full DeMar DeRozan experience you got. Yes, he was amazing in the third quarter when the Raptors blow the game wide open. But in the first half, it's terrible. He was not good.
Yeah, it's really weird because in the regular season, these problems didn't really happen that much, or they weren't accentuated that much. But in the playoff setting, it was really clear. Like, if DeMar was good, he was playing like a star. Otherwise, he was kind of negative. This is kind of a game where he's kind of both, and it's sort of in between. I'd say he was a net neutral in this one.
So 6 of 17 in the first half, and in the second half, DeMar DeRozan goes 6 of 12.
Yeah.
So you can see, it's a game of two halves, but man, like the no assists in the first half was insane to me.
Well,
because he was getting double teamed and as always never figured out a way to pass out of it and find, you know, Patrick Patterson who would miss an open three, but at least it would be the right basketball
play. Yeah, well, I mean, this is also a little peak Dwayne Casey kind of game because it is just classic pound the rock offense, man. Like, It is pick and roll after pick and roll every single play. And it's a pick and roll not to set up a play, just to give Kyle Namara an opportunity to attack and shoot. That's it. Yeah. They're not running another place. Now, granted, they don't have JV, who is definitely the third option, I would say, you know, in this season, and sometimes second option, depending on what one of the guys weren't in. And, you know, they run a couple of, like, pin downs and stuff for Terrence Ross. But for the most part, it is ball screen to get Kyle, to get DeMar to shoot. And it is just over and over and over again. And, you know, you're just kind of praying that those guys can make some shots. So this game, Kyle actually does make some shots, all right? Kyle hits 5 threes. Kyle was really good. So first half, he actually starts out 1 for 5, which I forgot about this. But he was able to successfully get to the line quite a few times. And then all of a sudden, he hits back-to-back threes from the right wing. And from that point onward, he was just, like, lights out. Like, he was making all sorts of shots. The pull-up, you know, off the high screen, the classic Hilary shot. Had a step-back three on Dwayne Wade. He got fouled by Goran Dragic on a three in the third quarter. You know, he finds Biombo so many times. And, yeah, man, Kyle Lowry. I mean, honestly, he was so good at the end of this game. Kyle Lowry hits a three to get to 35 points, and you hear Mike Breen's voice crack when he says bang, because he's so excited. And I'm like, you know what?
Wonderful.
What a success story, man. To go from game one where he's, you know, he hits that miracle, but whatever, like, they lose that game. He's staying after the game to shoot, to get to the end of that series in game seven where he's having this type of moment and vindicating so much of what, you know, Raptor fans came to know what's true about Kyle and the reasons we celebrate him. It was amazing, man. I'm so happy for Kyle watching this game back.
Yeah, it's. I'm looking back at the box score for the third quarter. Kyle Lowry goes 4 for 4, 2 threes, 4 assists, and 2 rebounds for a +5 because the Heat won their run. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he was amazing in the third quarter of that game to sort of put the Raptors just out of reach. And I think in the fourth quarter, I think at the top of the fourth quarter is when it's put away for good. Mm-hmm. But man, would that ever... It's just, you get the whole Kyle Lowry experience. Yeah, he starts off a little shaky, but he finds his stroke. He knows how to win. He knew to feed Bismack Biyombo and Patrick Patterson early, mm-hmm. because they were just, you know, all over Justice Winslow and Josh McRoberts. And even Tyler Johnson. I didn't notice it the first time, but Kyle Lowry does a great job at making sure that DeMar DeRozan is posting up Tyler Johnson, mm-hmm. as often as he could in the first quarter, because that's a mismatch. Like, Tyler Johnson is...
Well...
Is he still in the league?
Yes, he's with the Phoenix Suns.
Well, good for him.
Yeah. Sharing minutes with Cam Johnson. Yeah, for Kyle, like...
Anywho.
Here's the thing with Kyle, like, he was always a... He's not really a natural scorer anyway, so his scoring's gonna fluctuate, like... Even back then, this is probably one of his best seasons scoring the ball in 2016... You know, he starts out that year having the 40 points against, you know, Steph Curry and the Warriors when they were on their undefeated start to the year. That was an amazing game, man. I mean, the Raptors end up losing, but Kyle has like 41, Steph has like 44. It's close right down to the wire. You know, Kyle hits that game winner over Matthew Dellavedova. He has, I think, 40 in that one as well against Cleveland. And, you know, this is his best season scoring-wise, but he just is a guy who is going to have natural fluctuations in his scoring. Like, we even saw it. Yeah. You know, last year where he starts off the playoffs in which he wins the title by scoring 0 points in game one, and then he finishes it with game six. He scores 11 straight to start the game on the road. So in this Miami series, though, I gotta say, like, Kyle was fine. Like, he was pretty good in this one. So he has 33 in game three. He has 25 in game five, 36 in game six.
Game six.
And then he has 35 to close it out. Like, I would say that's pretty damn good. Like, you can't really expect more from him. I think what you needed to do for the rest of it was for the rest of the guys to be more consistent. But this is just a great moment for Kyle. You know, and it's still one of the best games he's ever played. I mean, you know, he's had better games since, I would say. There's a game against the Lakers where he only takes 16 shots but has like 40 points. It's really incredible. I think what he did in game six of the NBA Finals was just amazing, because he has 12 assists along with like 7 rebounds to go with the 26 points and 11 straight to start. Kawhi himself says that Kyle was the MVP of that game, so shout out to Kyle. But yeah, this was amazing for Kyle Lowry, and it was just really thrilled to see that happen. one thing I like to do when I watch these things back is look at the broadcast. So you mentioned you watched the Raptor broadcast. How would you compare? What was Jack and Matt's mood at that time?
Oh, I think they were optimistic. There was the idea that like it was obvious early in the game to go after the Heat's undersized bigs. Yeah, and the crowd was I've always loved the ACC or Scotiabank Arena's home crowd. It's just unbelievable. Later that year, LeBron James would comment on it being one of the best crowds he's ever played in front of. I completely agree with him.
LeBron's exact quote was, "I destroyed these guys and they're still cheering." Ah, LeBron.
Yes, but it was awesome. Like the crowd's super hyped. There's a great like PK Subban and Nav Bhatia seated side by side on the baseline. Yep. Two West End legends, if you ask me.
Yep. He's from Rexdale, right? PK?
PK, yeah, he's from just the other side of 27 from where I grew up. Right, okay. I grew up at Finch and 27. He's from Humberwood.
Okay.
So shout out to him.
Yeah.
And then Nav Bhatia, a great West End man. And another West End man who's in the news today. Aren't there rumors floating around about Tristan Thompson and Khloe Kardashian?
I don't know if they're true, but when I was
on a walk this afternoon, I saw TMZ. I'm like, all right, this is fine. Good for them. Using the quarantine for something.
Right.
Tristan Thompson also had a great Eastern Conference Finals that year.
Man. Yeah, look, listen. Tristan really did dominate the Raptors, too. Like, I want to slander Tristan. He was honestly, in some ways, he was kind of like the original Draymond in terms of that agitator, defender. You know, the rest of the star players are going to function around him. He was just going to do the dirty work. And he used to talk trash to the Raptors all the time. I mean,
as he should.
I mean, yeah. I mean, there was a video of him bringing the Larry O'Brien trophy to Tim Hortons in Brampton. Which, first off, out of all places you could bring the Larry O'Brien trophy, the Tim Hortons in Brampton is like bottom five.
I don't,
man. You can't tell me there's not better places in Brampton to be bringing the Larry O'Brien trophy to. And then, yeah, I remember he was just talking shit about Toronto, so like that. So, but you know, whatever. It is what it is. He won, so he gets to talk. The reason I asked you about the broadcast is because I watched the ESPN broadcast for this one. And some of the quotes are so like unintentionally funny. so
is it like Van Gundy, Breen, and Mark Jackson?
Yes, yes.
How do they do? I hardly remember.
I thought they were fine. I thought they didn't actually spend that much time complaining about the referees, which I appreciate, because obviously, you know, nowadays Jeff Van Gundy definitely likes to take over the broadcast and focus too much on that. But I got some select quotes here. So from Mike Breen, you know, in terms of the first six games, quote, "It's not been pretty." And they were talking about the starting lineups and Justice Winslow starting. And Jeff Van Gundy says, quote, "I saw Winslow play center in high school. To see it in the playoffs is ridiculous." Mike Breen says, quote, "It's never easy for the Raptors." Mike Breen says, "Lowry is so adept at falling." Because Lowry drawing fouls. Mark Jackson says, quote, "With all due respect, they're doing you a favor by putting Patrick Patterson on you." This is, they're talking about Joe Johnson getting guarded by Patrick Patterson. Again, all of these sound like disses, all right? Mike Breen, quote, "DeRozan has a lot of points, but he's 9 of 25.
Exactly. He's right.
And then the last one was just funny. It has nothing to do with the Raptors, but Jeff Van Gundy just randomly says at the very end, because they're talking about the Heat and how they're, you know, what questions they're going to do in the offseason and stuff like that. But Van Gundy says, Whiteside's going to have multiple teams giving him the max, so he's got to be the number one priority for Miami. Which, yikes. Because that also led to Dwayne Wade randomly leaving the team and going to Chicago and then Cleveland for a little bit, which was strange to see Wade wearing anything other than Miami on his chest.
Yeah, that was an insane situation.
Yeah, especially when it was Wade, Rondo, and Jimmy Butler, the three alphas.
But then, didn't they have, like, that great series? to
get. Yeah, or, they were up 2-0 on the Celtics.
Oh yeah, the Celtics. But the Celtics aren't good, so who cares?
Yeah. No, it was a fun season for them in the sense that they got into so many arguments and fights. Remember, because Rondo was like, "Yo, I'm sticking up for my rookies like Nikola Mirotic and all these other guys, Bobby Portis, because you know Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler are on their own little frat and stuff." I don't know. It was weird, man. It was weird, but I don't know. There won't be a Last Dance season on that Chicago Bulls team. That's for sure.
Yeah, those mid-2000s Bulls teams, or 2010s teams, were so bad. Speaking of, I was thinking about that Mother's Day, was it Game 6 where LeBron James goes crazy to beat the Bulls at the end of the game? That was that was on a Sunday. And it was a Mother's Day, and I remember it well now.
Was this the year Derrick Rose hit that shot? No, that was 2015, right?
Yeah. No, when he like puffed out his chest, and then they lost every game after that?
Well, yeah. The history of Derrick Rose versus LeBron is pretty much the same as the history of the Raptors versus LeBron. Like it's one-sided for sure. Some other random notes I wanted to bring along before we get to three stars and things like this. So they were doing the free shirts promotion as they do that year. It was very strange. The 2016 year, they kept making weird like printed T-shirts. Like I have a beaver shirt. There was like a
you have a lucky beaver shirt.
Yeah, I got a lucky beaver shirt, which I remember because my Google Photos was like, oh, 1 year ago today, and I had a picture of me wearing the Lucky Beaver shirt for Game 7 between the Raptors and the Sixers. And, of course, that shirt
is undefeated. Wait, you wore that to the arena?
Yeah, it's undefeated. I wore it underneath other things because I'm a professional, but, you know. Okay. Yeah.
All right, good. You know, that's what I was worried about.
But, yeah, they were doing the free shirts, and so they put two of those comically ugly free shirts on Drake's courtside seats, which Drake doesn't end up showing up to this game. I think he gave it to Baca and some other guy. That I don't recognize, but those guys showed up late, like maybe second half. So for the most of the game, you see action going on, and you see Drake's seats empty, and they put the free shirts on there. There's no way Drake's taking that free shirt home, though, man. He's not putting that on. Like you can't imagine a situation where Drake takes those, you know. But anyway, whatever. I guess everyone has to get an equal chance there. Some other notes. So they were showing, like again, preview to the game itself. And they were showing how both teams were struggling from three. Both teams shooting 31% in the first six games from three. And the Miami Heat were averaging 13 assists per game to against 14 turnovers per game. That's unbelievable.
Oh, my God. That's incredible.
I've never seen...
I had one note from the broadcast. I sent it to you, and I'll tweet the picture out when we release this episode. Mm. But there's this great scene from the broadcast where Nick Nurse is... interviewed on the sideline, sort of that coming out of the first half assistant coach look. Mm-hmm. And it's like Nick Nurse, the Chiron below him, says assistant coach. You see Bruno Caboclo in the background. I'm like, whoa, things have changed. Like, the Raptors are a totally different franchise. What things that don't change are Kyle Lowry wins games. Kyle Lowry brings winning to your franchise. But that was the note that was on the TSN broadcast that I thought was, looked cool. It was just sort of weird to see Nick Nurse, assistant coach.
Yeah, Nick glowed up too. Nick definitely had a little bit of a glow up.
Yeah,
and I'm very happy for Nick that happened. He looks good. He looks really good now. He's kind of aging backwards a little bit. Some other random notes. JV is wearing a camel suit jacket.
The camel suit
with a Gucci belt. And my question is, why do NBA players spend money this way?
Yeah, that was great. He looked insane. Yo,
a camel suit and Gucci belt, man. Like, that doesn't go... I don't know, man.
He was on his, you know... He looked great. I gotta rate it. Yeah? He looked very Mississauga.
Who looked better in that? JV with the camel suit or Jamal McGlure in the camel jersey?
Oh, man. Big Cat. I don't need to get involved in that.
All right. I'm just going to let that slide. All right.
Because if I piss off the JV Hive, the West End's coming after me. If I piss off Jim McGlure, the East End's coming after me. Wow. So.
Yeah. No, you're right. Other things I missed from this game. DeMar DeRozan's girlfriend counting down the shot clock. I forgot about this.
Was that... I remember... I heard the list. I'm like, I remember the story behind this.
Five?
But don't...
Four?
Yeah.
Three? And it's just like every single... Well, first off, because it was a lot of ISO ball, a lot of possessions came down in the last 5 seconds. And yeah, so you hear it all the time. And I gotta give her credit because she was really like audible throughout the whole thing. Like you could really hear her. Yeah. And that's impressive because like, it's a playoff game. Everyone's cheering, but you can hear distinctly what's going on. If anything, I kind of wish she was at the Game 7 last year between the Raptors and the Sixers. Because the only way the Kawhi shot gets even better is if you hear the counting down at the end. Four, three. Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been great.
That was great. Towards the end, when the Raptors are clearly going to win the game, and you know they're giving Kyle Lowry a standing ovation, they're giving DeMar a standing ovation, they're celebrating, the crowd starts chanting, "We want Cleveland."
Well, it's a far, you know the reason why they had to do that.
Why?
They had to overcome the bad press from the Indiana Pacers game ops fumble from that playoff run. Do you remember the, there was like, game ops ran a promotion, or not, like a video that was very insulting to the people of Indianapolis.
Oh, okay.
Basically, do you remember
this? No, I forgot. I only remember the Indiana fans being very confused why there were so many...
Who are all these brown
fans? Yeah, he's like, I can't believe all of Toronto was like this. I think all of Mississauga went to that game, actually.
Yeah, there was a great... And I mean, it was just so embarrassing. But Game Ops did, like, got some blowback. So the fans were just trying to patch things up.
I see.
It was like top 10 things to come out of Indiana, and it was not...
Right. And they were saying, like farm animals and stuff. A crop circle. Okay, I remember this.
They had to clean up.
Yeah, that's true. They had to change that up. That's true. That was disrespectful. And then the only other thing I wanted to note before we get to three stars, and of course just the reaction to this game, because that's also really great. But at the end of the game, so the shot clocks turn off, the Raptors have won, it's the end of the series, Norm and James Johnson are both on the floor at the same time. Norm Powell and James Johnson. At this time, Norm Powell's a rookie. James Johnson has been in the league a couple of years. And they're passing the ball around back and forth like a hot potato at the end of the game because they want to avoid the turnover. Guys, let's be focused here. It's a game 7, all right? First off, you're not even getting a turnover for that. That's not even a turnover. That's like a team turnover if it's going to be recorded as one. And B, no one cares if you played a minute long and had a turnover, man. So... I just thought it's like a difference in mentality between like how sort of serious everyone is now as compared to then. Because it looks so comical. That's some shit you would see in December. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But the Miami Heat put in a December level effort for the fourth quarter.
So. That is true. Honestly, it was really funny because the Heat just didn't get any shots. Like the Raptors got like maybe 10 offensive rebounds in the fourth. They just didn't get to shoot the ball. They got outscored 30-11 in the fourth quarter.
I was looking at that same line on the box score. That's not good.
No.
Anywho.
All right, three stars. So we all agree. Kyle Lowry's a first star, 35 points, 7 rebounds, 9 assists, 4 steals, 11 of 20 from the field, 5 of 7 from 3, 8 of 11 from the free throw line. Incredible in 42 minutes of play, plus 31. Who's the second star from this game?
So the second star, I think you've got to give it to... I want to give it to Bismack Biyombo.
Okay.
I think, yeah, he doesn't have 17 points, 16 rebounds, 5 from 12 from the free throw line, kind of rough. Mm. 40 minutes, plus 25.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't think of somebody... There's watching the game, yeah, he still has all of... It's still a Bismack Biyombo performance, but... It's a vintage one, and it's one that I look back on fondly and remember him well by. And if I get the opportunity to give him 2 stars, I'm going to take it.
Fair enough. Yeah, no, he's... it's just really impressive when you watch the game because Miami just didn't attack the basket because Biyombo was there.
Yep.
And it was a subtle thing, but they just didn't. They just shot a bunch of jumpers. And that's part of the reason why their offense was so butt, like, for the whole game. It was just Biyombo was there to block everything. And then the third star, I'm giving that to, I mean, honestly, Patrick Patterson has a real case for this. 11 points, 11 rebounds, 7 of them offensive. But I'm going to get into Damari Carroll just because he hit some really, really big transition threes. And most importantly, he got Dwayne Wade in foul trouble early in the game, which screwed up Miami's rotation. And yeah, so, I mean, honestly, Damari was really good in this one. No slander whatsoever for Damari.
And he played really well. I think he had fourth quarters for most of the fourth quarter and just managed. He turned in a real professional performance. And why isn't this the Damari Carroll game? And it's the game where he put up 8 in the first quarter against the Milwaukee Bucks as his signature Raptors playoff performance.
Wow. Was that the game we watched together? And
No. That was that same series, but oh.
That was terrible, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damari Carroll.
Yeah, well.
Did the Spurs waive him? What happened?
I don't remember. Is he still on the team? Because he's on Houston. He's their new center. He's their backup center.
What are you talking about? He was. Oh yeah, he was. I knew he got waived by the Spurs.
He got waived, eh? Word.
Yeah, he got waived by the Spurs, and then the Rockets picked him up on the 21st of February.
Yeah.
Was he playing? Was he getting minutes?
I remember him actually playing some minutes. I don't know. But he's a kind of pluck
for the Spurs. He played a little bit, but
yeah.
Well, I'm wondering if he was playing for if he was getting minutes for the Rockets. He played. He was getting minutes.
All right.
Good for him.
In terms of the Gerald Henderson Award, there's a couple of ways you can go with this. I'm gonna go. For me personally, it's got to be Joe Johnson, even though he only has 13 points. But it just viscerally felt like he was dominating the Raptors. As dominant of a 13-point performance as you'll ever see. Vintage Joe Johnson here. What did you think?
Yeah, I would, like, you could argue that Tyler Johnson was surprised. Like, he has a positive plus-minus and a gigantic loss. Mm-hmm. In his 20 minutes, but he wasn't super impactful.
No.
Joe Johnson, yeah, he put some fear in my heart when he got hot for a little bit at the beginning of the third quarter. Yeah, that's got to be it for me.
Yeah.
I'm excited to do the Patrick Patterson Award because there's only one name.
All right, well then the Patrick Patterson Award. Not going to Patrick Patterson this one, all right? Pat was pretty good. Who you got?
Corey Joseph.
Oh, come on.
He was terrible. I didn't remember how bad he was in this game. Corey Joseph is like, I remember him being like a pretty competent professional player, like good player when he was with the Raptors. Mm. Somehow still a plus 14 when he goes 0 for 8. He was not good.
Yeah, this is unbelievable, man. 0 for 8. and I think when I was watching this, I was just like, it looks like he only has one move. The crossover from left to right and then pull up long two, and he missed all of them.
Exactly.
It was sort of just like,
it was crazy.
Yeah, no, the offense just didn't work for Corey Joseph. Like, you can't expect Corey Joseph to create out of pick and roll like Kyle and DeMar can. So when the bench comes in, you got to run a different offense if you're gonna get anything from Corey Joseph, and they just didn't do that. So it's not Corey's fault.
It was bad.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah, Corey's a player that I respect, and I'm really glad that he came to Toronto, like coming off of a championship. Like, it was cool, but he was bad in this game. He was not good.
Yeah. No, that's not.
And then he went to Indiana.
Yeah. That was a little random that he was end up in Indiana, but, you know, I think, was that the sign and trade where the Raptors got CJ Miles? I think that was it. So, all right. The best part about this game, and one of the main reasons I wanted to revisit it, was because, not necessarily of the game itself, but because of the celebrations afterward. Because it's not as legendary as the parade, because nothing will match that. That's like 3 million people in the street. The parade takes 5 hours. It's just a legendary moment for Toronto, and really, it's sensational thinking about that time and how little social distancing there was at that moment. But this was kind of like the parade before the parade. This was like the mini parade. This is like the Weston Road version of the Santa Claus parade. This is not the main one that goes downtown. Yeah. This is the Etobicoke one.
So, like, you know, watching this game in Scotland, it felt a little weird to not be in the city during the game, and I kind of missed, like, oh, it would be nice mm-hmm. to, you know, watch this with Will in one of our living rooms, or watch it in Jurassic Park with me, you, and Joe Wolfond. But it was seeing the videos of the crowd in Young Dundas Square waiting for the traffic lights to change before going crazy that made me think, like, shit, I wish I was home for this. It was, yeah, it's such a classic moment. Seeing that made you know that if this city ever won a championship, the parade would be legendary. And it was. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Toronto Tupac. Because, you know what? Everyone knows about the Kawhi plant guy. The plant guy who wanted to give Kawhi a plant, whatever. I get all that. There's, you know, it's cool. He has nothing on Toronto Tupac, man.
Nothing.
Yeah. That guy was...
Yeah, that was...
He saw this, like... Because it was on the corner of Young Dundas, and as you mentioned, like, every time the lights turn, and it's always a crosswalk, so people can really go in the middle of the street and everything. And there were cars going by, honking. There's, like, some kind of car with, like, I think, a Cadillac with some, like, hydraulics, and it's moving up and down, and it's a real scene. But at one point, you know, there's this, like, random Somali dude who just comes in wearing a LeBron Cavs jersey, and Toronto Tupac brings him out into the middle of the intersection and gets everyone to boo this guy. I don't think they knew each other. I think they were strangers. And really, he's in the middle of traffic, but everyone's just booing the hell out of this dude, man. It's just, it was, man, that scene is incredible, man. I'm so happy they got to do it for real. Like, I wonder where Toronto Tupac was for the actual Raptors parade.
Oh, man, that is a good question. I don't think I saw anything. I wonder where he was the night that, like, the Raptors won the championship. Because I was in Young Dundas Square.
Oh, man.
And it was perfect. It was, you know, everybody was, like, drunk and hugging or fighting. And people were, like, way too closely packed. There were people who were, like, had climbed the TTC buses that they deployed to sort of block off traffic. Mm. It was amazing.
Didn't
like, from Young Dundas Square...
Go didn't ahead. It knock over a TTC bus?
I don't... Yeah, something like that. It was amazing. It was insane. I'm sure that, you know, the taxpayers had to pay too much money for property that was destroyed, but who gives a shit?
Because that was... That's fine, man. I mean, look, listen, tax money goes lots of places less necessary than that. I'm happy we got a prop.
Exactly. Yeah, that was...
Yeah, what a time, man.
What a time.
So.
Damn, man. It's so sad. Like, Jurassic Park should be packed right now, and people should be out in the cold, and what would be the end of the second round, so the Raptors would be going to the Eastern Conference Finals after winning in 7 games against the Celtics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll see it in June from...
I mean, it's still possible.
A gym in Orlando.
They just won't play 7 games.
But if the Raptors would go to the Eastern Conference Finals, do people still show up in Young Dundas Square and have a socially distanced celebration?
Nah, you can't stop us, man. I'm sorry, John Torrey. You can't stop us, man. Raptor fans, man. We don't know how to act. And that's one of the funny things about this is just the amount of celebration that went into not going into the finals, not like the bounce and then things like going like it was... just beating the Heat. But, I mean, look, here's the thing, man. I don't want to put down Raptor fans for celebrating this either because I was celebrating it just as hard. This was such a big moment where the Raptors had finally broken through. Yes, it was ugly. Yes, they had to play 2 7-game series to get there. And, yes, they had to play some ugly, ugly basketball that did not work in the end. But it was a time, man. It was a time.
Yeah, I'm so glad that we got to talk about this game. I will remember it well. Like, it is, to me, the Kyle Lowry game. I know that Game 6 in Oakland is a more significant game. But, to me, this was the moment where I think, like, he became unimpeachably the guy on that team. And you know, probably the greatest Raptor of all time, because he did what Vince couldn't do. He punched our ticket to go to the Eastern Conference Finals, and that game was all him. Yeah, Biz was great. Yeah, DeMar did the DeMar thing, and we had a surprisingly good game for Patrick Patterson, but like, Kyle Lowry over everything, man.
Kyle Lowry over everything. All right, so that does it for the podcast. Josh, thanks for coming on.
Of course.
What do you have to say to the people out there, man? People miss your voice and stuff, you know?
I can't wait to bring back the call-in show. Hopefully, when things get back, we'll be back as well. It seems like that's the vibe. Mm-hmm. I hope everybody's keeping safe, keeping healthy. You know, bake some sourdough.
Yeah, you're making sourdough?
I'm not making sourdough, but maybe people listening might. The encouragement from me is all they need. So
it's tough.
But yeah, it doesn't seem easy. Are you making sourdough?
Yeah, we tried it out here. It did not work out. We kind of ended up making a very, very hard Costco ciabatta bread.
Sounds like food, I guess.
It's very specific, but you know, it tastes just like that one. yeah, man.
All right.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Again, if you have other suggestions for the Raptors Reaction Podcast Classic, please let me know on Twitter and things like this. So that does it for the podcast. You know, stay safe, and there'll be more content next week.
Be good.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.